Okay, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Right, and here we go again, second segment.
Yes. So I think the topic we think probably want to we talked yes. about concentrating on this one here is there's a current brouhaha.
I love that word, brouhaha.
All right, having to do with neighborhood associations.
Yes.
Now, I mean, and I can speak at great length about neighborhood associations.
Yes, you've helped set some history. Up. Or set up
right, I mean, there, I mean, I'll just say that right now. I mean, there are many neighborhood associations in the city.
Yeah.
And what I, you know, I've periodically keep track of them, and I used to have links to a lot of them up on my website. But what I've actually noticed is that some of them have just been going out of existence. Hmm. And other ones have been coming into existence.
A lot of them, yeah.
There are certain neighborhood associations, and then there are also organizations of neighborhood associations as
right.
well.
That's right.
Or organizations that purport to try to do that.
To be like with the neighborhood, like, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is some of them came into it. What I think is typically true is that, oh, and I also want to mention about what they call neighborhood councils, which is a different thing that was tied to the community school program.
Oh, right? Okay, that... Right. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
For the most part, except with exception of what were called stabilization committees, which were kind of created usually in response to things like development pressures or right. The Red Line extension. I think the North Cambridge Stabilization Committee is actually rooted in funds that were set aside.
That goes way back.
Tied to the extension of the Red Line.
Yeah. Some people, right. young people don't remember that it didn't go to Davis Square. Right.
Exactly. But it was in the 1980s is when that extended, and that when the North Cambridge Stabilization Committee was there in anticipation of the fact that with public transit comes development pressure,
right.
and that there was this notion that you should have something to have the community be able to organize around that, you know, that inevitability and to, you know, respond accordingly. Many other neighborhood associations have come into existence in response to what they perceived as a crisis. Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Association, for example, came into existence, gosh, it's got to be close to 40 years ago now, 35,
really?
40 years ago, in response to a major large-scale development that was proposed for Inman Square.
Huh.
And people on streets like Fayette Street and Antrim Street, you know, were a little bit horrified by what was coming down the pike.
What was the major development?
I think it was going to be just a much taller building than that was going to be a real traffic drawer, you know, and they were a little horrified by it. So they organized or whatever. The project never came to be, by the way.
I was going to say, I don't know any tall building over there.
But. Yeah, and I don't think it was necessarily because they totally monkey wrenched the possibility, you know.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes neighborhood associations define themselves by their ability to block things. That's unfortunately the case. But you know, for the most part, it's a perceived problem, and they kind of get created in order to do that. Oftentimes, years and years after that project has long since been forgotten, they still sort of, I like to say, they bear the scars of their own birth, mm-hmm. And they continue to define themselves as sort of wanting to obstruct. Right. But many of the better ones actually kind of mature and reach this sort of point where they really grow to work with property owners and developers. If a project is coming down, they try and get the best benefits mm-hmm. out of that. Actually, one of the neighborhood associations that was probably most successful, that was the East Cambridge Planning Team.
Uh-huh.
And
better
years,
known as, and what's the acronym?
ECPT.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing is, they've got a really great track record, actually, of working with property major developers, because there's been no development pressure in Cambridge greater than what East Cambridge has been subjected to. So,
right.
And they realized they couldn't stop everything, right. and I don't know that, for the most part, they wanted to stop everything,
right.
but they wanted to work with them. So they managed to extract great benefits, actually. Over
As time. We heard the other night from Mark Jackwith, who just, this whole list of project,
yeah.
which I wasn't even aware of.
Yes.
Public.
Now, exactly. Now, so I think they have a lot to be proud of over the years. But maybe I think it was what, five-ish years ago, you know, the next in the line of big development proposal was the courthouse redevelopment.
Right.
You know, the Sullivan Courthouse, you know, Middlesex County Courthouse, mm-hmm. Just in case the Sullivan family doesn't want Eddie Sullivan's name forever tied to this asbestos-laden building.
Oh, it's an ugly building anyway. Although a lot of them were built like that anyway.
Right. But the thing is, that very much out-of-scale building was built because it was a government building and they were not subject to the local zoning codes.
Right.
All right, so they operated that courthouse building for a fair number of years, but the thing is, and eventually it was declared a sick building and the court operations moved out, and eventually the jail operations moved out. Right. And it was there, and then the Division of Capital Assets Management for the state was going to dispose of it.
Who wants it? Yeah.
Who wants it, right? And basically the city of Cambridge says, we don't want it, because it would be an enormous money sink.
So they said they didn't want it at first.
Yeah. It wasn't really warm. The only way it was actually going to be, and people have argued this to be sure, but the only way that this asset could be disposed of in a way was where you could allow a certain amount of development, redevelopment, to generate enough money to cover all the costs of asbestos remediation without losing money in the deal.
Right.
So I think a lot of people kind of understood that. It was also built, it existed there. It's a pre-existing non-conforming building. Mm-hmm. There was no legal mechanism to sort of tear it down. But there were some neighbors who wanted to do so. Meanwhile, the East Cambridge planning team, and I hope I'm getting this for the most part correct.
I'm sure you'll find out if it isn't.
Yes.
I'll let you know.
But the East Cambridge planning team chose to say, okay, look, we don't love it either. A lot of their members hated it, but the thing is, they said it ain't going away.
Right.
So let's try and make the best of it, right? So they negotiated for things, whatever, and there was at least some understanding.
Well, who did they negotiate with? Who, with the potential buyer?
Well, basically, they were, you know, to get some concessions for taking floors off the top, and then the developer, which is Leggett McCall, was willing to do some of these things.
Leggett McCall,
the city was,
right.
The planning board was also getting involved in this point because of, they have to.
Right.
But the thing is, there were some neighbors in the area who just said, basically said, we want it gone.
Right.
So they formed their own neighborhood association.
Called?
I think it was just something like the Neighbors of East Cambridge. I actually don't remember the acronym right now.
All right.
I haven't heard of them. So they may have actually, passed into history by this point.
Yeah.
But eventually the courthouse got its special permit approved. The only thing that was still lacking was the parking arrangement, the leaseholder agreement with the city, because the city owns the parking garage that would be necessary for.
That's right. That was a whole other thing. Right. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, people took sides on this. Some of the people in East Cambridge, especially the people who had been with the East Cambridge planning team for some time, wanted to work with them to get a deal. But I think they had some turnover in the leadership in the body. And then now there were people who were very much opposed to actually granting the leasehold agreement, or at least holding their feet seriously to the fire to get greater benefits out of it.
Uh-huh.
There was some turnover in the leadership of the group. And some people were very unhappy about being basically getting pushed out. Now, my personal opinion is nobody should be pushed out of neighborhood associations. If anything, just change the way the board operates so that you can keep all the
votes. But these were elections, though, no?
They actually did elections, right? But I think
I don't know how they do elections, but
they were all different. Every neighborhood association is different, really.
Right.
But anyway, when that happened with the leasehold arrangement, there was sort of it set the stage for some bad feelings that continued.
Sure.
One particular person named Lauren Crow was very active, very visible in arguing about the asbestos and whatever. You know, he's kind of interesting. Anyway, so that passes. And then the next thing that comes down the road was a call to have an East Cambridge Neighborhood Conservation District, right?
Well, much later.
Much later, yeah. But the thing
is that,
I mean, I like to think of the courthouse as kind of what determined the sides of the battle.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
some
I see
of the local politics, whether it's the Better Cambridge people, were kind of pretty much gung-ho for the courthouse project.
Right.
And other people on the other side were opposed to the courthouse project. When the East Cambridge Neighborhood Conservation District was proposed, the people who were not particularly thrilled with the courthouse tended to be the ones who were, you know, pushing for the conservation district. But the thing is, it wasn't fundamentally tied to the courthouse at this point. I just wanted to hear about that. But then the rhetoric started being spread around how, oh, neighborhood conservation districts are just a scheme through which property owners can drive their property values up, which
is ridiculous. That was so insane, especially for that area, because if you look, if you walk around there, which I have so many times, there's so many, you know, torn down buildings and boxes put up and expensive condos. And it's like, yeah, I could see why they want to conserve what they've got left.
Yeah. No,
it's ridiculous.
Whether the a conservation district is the right way to do that or not, I'll leave that to others to decide. But the thing is but you know, it's a mechanism that it exists.
Right.
There are other neighborhood conservation districts in Cambridge. I live in one in Mid Cambridge.
Right.
You know, and I mean, so it's an established route.
And their argument was that it would make rents go up. What are you talking about?
The
rents crazy down there.
I think the rents are going up anyway. Everywhere I don't think it had anything to do with this.
I mean,
right. Yeah. But the thing is that so they had to have meetings to do that. And then there was disruptive behavior.
At those meetings.
Yes. And now you know, some neighborhoods associations have websites and listservs and some of the stuff is very open. Some of it's pretty closed. Some of it's
moderated. Do they have a listserv? Does East Cambridge have a listserv?
They have a listserv. I'm not on it.
I don't believe
they have a website or even a Facebook page anymore. So, so they're kind of a little bit insulated. So there was some controversy. So some of the people were taking sides.
Yeah.
It got out of hand. You know, you knew it was coming. There was going to be something. Right. I mean, I'm an old New Yorker, you know. Eventually, when people don't get along, somebody's going to say something, somebody said something, right? And then next thing you know, the city council got involved because, you know, it was
bad behavior by a person.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the thing is that I think anybody who was sort of somewhat familiar with the whole long tail
saga,
of this
right.
knows that it was the what was considered to be sort of the dreadful act, which was supposedly...
Well, it was inexcusable. It was really bad. It was homophobic and all that. But that was not... That should not have generated all of this other stuff.
Exactly. To me, that's one of the... I always like to say that's the thing where you go, uh-oh, I screwed up. Don't do this. Let's go out for a beer. Let's patch this up and move
on.
Or
whatever. Right? He resigned. They got rid of whatever. But it just... Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't enough.
But then for reasons that I really can't understand, but maybe I do because it's political, the Cambridge City Council then somehow intervenes, puts in a policy order that not only condemns, bad person,
they
shouldn't have said this.
They specifically mentioned that group and what happened.
Right. But then put in language that at least suggested or could be interpreted.
Interpreted, right.
As saying that
The
city,
city
council
has to then
should,
get involved in,
Right. Somehow the city council should be setting standards for neighborhood associations or whatever.
Right.
And then that turned into a discussion about, well, this is our right of assembly. You know, it's a constitutional right.
Oh, really? A lot of backlash.
A lot of backlash about that, you know. Now, the truth is that if the city was actually, if these neighborhood associations had any kind of official standing.
Funding or anything. Yeah.
Or, you know, if, for example, the elections of their board were all conducted by the Cambridge Election Commission, which they are not, right? The thing is, then the city would actually have some say in this, but they really don't, and they never have, and they shouldn't.
Right.
Some people have tried to interpret it as saying, well, because they are some board, like a planning board or the Board of Zoning Appeals might say, do we have anybody here from the neighborhood has got anything to say about this? Anything a neighbor?
So they have more power because they're always consulted on curb cuts and stuff like that.
No, actually, they're not. What they are.
Oh, I thought they are.
No, what happens is that the word is that you send out for somebody
to a butters, a curb cut, right.
You send out the notice to a butters, and if right. there exists a neighborhood association, right. then they're on the mailing list.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
And then they have a right. The neighborhood association can write an opinion saying we agree with this or we right. disagree with that, and then the city council can look at it or ignore it if they wish.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not like they have any veto power or any standing.
No, but it always helps. It helps the person asking for it if the neighborhood association is behind.
You know, I like to say it depends on how the neighborhood association is viewed. And it said, I don't like to name names about this, but there have been some neighborhood associations in other parts of the city
that are very punitive and don't want anything done.
Well, who basically had become so defined by their tendency to simply block anything and everything.
Development.
And
I see what you're saying.
They did it oftentimes in ways that were very much against the interests of the better interests of the city, at least from some point people's points of view.
Yes.
That if they basically cast an opinion about a curb cut or something or a development proposal or whatever, most of the boards would basically say, "Oh, it's just those people."
Oh,
you know,
wow.
So they don't. Yeah. You know, the thing is to say that there's no standing. If you have a good reputation, it is quite likely
that
your words will be taken seriously.
Yeah, that happened recently in Cambridgeport, where they approved something that had been charter righted, and it was good. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, to me, the way I've always looked at this is that if you have a neighborhood group that behaves well, provides great services, it'll be respected. In which case, you know, if I was serving on a board and they came for it, I say, "Well, talk to me. You might know more about this than I do."
Right.
You know. But it's really just, it's a power of persuasion based on reputation. It's not any kind of official standing. But I think some of the public commenters and even some of the city councilors were trying to suggest that these groups had some kind of official standing so that that would then justify the city being able to basically lay down certain rules and regulations, which it just isn't really the way it is, you know. Now, there was another vehicle. You know, and we did mention Frank Duhay earlier, you know, in the last half hour, because he was a very big proponent of the neighborhood schools, you know, and it was associated with these they were called community school programs. And the community school programs were often tied to school buildings because that was a resource that would be available for neighborhood use potentially.
Yeah.
And they created what they called neighborhood councils. Like in my neighborhood, there's a Longfellow Neighborhood Council, even though the Longfellow School technically isn't there anymore, except for the building.
Yeah, but didn't it mainly cater to people that would know about, like, parents of school children?
It was really up to them. So the thing is, the neighborhood schools were, or the community school program was not specifically for parents.
True, but that was sort of the next.
It was more a way of making good use of the facility. You know,
I agree. And I think it did work out for a while. There are a lot of community.
Yeah. I think it was a good idea then. It's actually something I think the city should try to beef up again. I think it was a good thing. But the thing is, because those were sanctioned by the city and were utilizing school properties and paid staff, you know, the people who were paid by city money, then that was a mechanism through which the city could have some say-so
exactly
in how they were orchestrated, or if they had elections to say how they can do that.
Right, very
That's
different.
Not what neighborhood associations are. Neighborhood associations are just groups of people.
That's right.
You know, with either good reputations or crummy reputations, and that's all they are.
And say something that you've said to me when we weren't on camera about listservs and how some of them can be pick and choose of who they...
Yeah, so different neighborhood associations operate in different ways. I'll say, in my opinion, the gold standard is the Agassiz Neighborhood Council, which will probably be called renamed soon, I imagine, but I don't know that. Because they actually provide services. They have a very child-centered
But wait, are they of the old model where they get money from the city then?
No, they're not.
Why is it called Neighborhood Council? Because now you're confused.
I think because the neighborhood councils work in conjunction with the neighborhood association, so it's kind of it's associated with it.
But they are separate. They don't get any money from the city.
I don't. They may. The neighborhood council might. But the thing is that they're organized as a nonprofit.
I see.
And they actually have a building on Sacramento Street, and they right. host the Maud Morgan Art.
Oh, right. I know about that. Center. So I think they're more, I don't know if they would be, I wouldn't see them in the same model as like Cambridge Port or Porter
Street. No, they're very, but that's the point, is they're all very different. So the thing is that people right. in that neighborhood have basically chosen to retain that structure, which is very much provide services. And I have to say, they also provide great archives, historical archives of all of the newsletters. Yeah. And
but
things
I would say that they're probably
the
more apolitical than some yes. of the other ones.
Yes, well, that really would be the gold standard, in my opinion, is to be less political and more
right. but
service
if you
had, oriented.
But if there was an issue in your neighborhood and you really wanted to get
they have expressed opinion.
Have they? Okay.
Over the years, right. sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, but other neighborhood associations, that when the Porter Square Neighbors Association, they kind of followed it. When we used to have something called the Central Square Neighborhood Coalition, right. which was spawned during the 1990s. And we were kind of new and different in that we decided that we wanted to work cooperatively with the business community in Cambridge, yeah. in Central Square, together with four neighborhoods that abutted Central Square. So we were not there to kind of fight the man, you know, we were right. there to kind of find solutions, and we did. We didn't last super long because of, that's a whole nother story. But actually right around that time, the Porter Square Neighbors Association said, hey, we kind of like that model. So they created something very similar to that up in Porter Square.
Okay.
You know, and they have a good reputation of actually working with the local business community, and it's not a combative relationship. It's actually a cooperative relationship. There are other entities like the North Cambridge Stabilization Committee, which kind of has a history of basically being more opposition oriented. Mm-hmm. You could probably opine on the changing nature of the Cambridge Port Neighbors Association.
Well, I haven't been involved in it that long, but it has changed definitely since I first kind of knew about it. But
the entity in Cambridgeport used to hear the Ward 5 Democratic Committee is the one who basically presented itself.
Well, that's probably why I never was involved.
Yeah, right. But they're the ones that presented themselves as the neighborhood association. They were actually part of the Democratic City Committee.
You're absolutely right.
So the thing is, it varies all over the map.
That's true.
You know,
it depends on who starts it and how it's
exactly. Founded. You know, yeah. Some are good, some are not so good. I've heard that the Wellington Harrington neighborhood, they had a pretty good one for a while, but I believe they've sort of come undone for a variety of reasons. But you know, like the death of major players and the fact that it is very difficult to get people to actually participate and do the heavy lifting. One of the great resentments, I'd have to say, and I think it's valid, from the people from the East Cambridge planning team, is that we're talking about people who actually put in a lot of effort to try and make things happen,
right?
You know, and that's not being recognized particularly by the city council. So they're saying, okay, an unfortunate incident happened, so let's just sort of rake you guys over the coals here, without really acknowledging a lot of the incredibly good work that they've actually done over the years.
And each group, I have to say, now that you're saying all these different groups, they're all very different in why they started and what they do. And it's just, and I don't see how you can regulate any of that.
I don't know that there's a way you can do it. I think the way the city council would try to do it if they could, is they would find a way to basically, you know, give you the carrot and say, we'll give you money. Giving you money. Yeah. Then we will then have some say so in requiring you to do things in a particular way. I think that would be a mistake.
Me too. I don't want to see money given to any groups. I think that's crazy.
There was one group, I think the city council, at least some of the city councilors, were teetering on the edge of wanting to have that happen. Maybe 15, 20 years ago. And I won't name names here again, but there was one group then was putting out, you know, a lot of them put out newsletters or whatever. Yeah. And there was some very specific targeted rhetoric going towards certain elected officials.
Uh-oh.
And they said, what, we're going to support, put tax money here toward a group here that just basically come back and tell us all to go to hell? And so then I think that kind of pretty much set the standard within city administration that maybe that's not such a good idea.
Yeah. Can I just throw in something that is not, I was a VISTA volunteer in the late 60s, and when the government realized that all the VISTA volunteers were draft dodgers, men trying to get out of, that's when it became community vistas. It was no longer national. So in other words, we're paying these people to be subversives and they're saying this. Anyway, so right. It sort of goes all along the line there. It's like, stay out of that.
You know, there's a reason why I still, to this day, on my Cambridge Civic Journal, which I started, by the way, because I got sick of working within neighborhood groups and associations.
That's right. You said that.
Yeah. So I said, listen, I'm just going, I'm going
to be an independent voice.
Yeah. I'm just going to be an independent voice. Exactly.
Yeah. We've got time.
All right. Yeah. So anyway, now I've totally lost.
I know my Vista Volunteer thing. Right. Off. But anyway, yeah, so let's not give them money and whatever.
Right, I think there are ways in which some of these associations can generate some revenue.
Didn't the new policy order say, let's just have a neighborhood planning, that long committee meeting, and have a meeting about it, which I think is all right.
If they ought to have a meeting where they can basically just hash out a few thoughts, and then people can adopt them or not, that's something.
Right, and people could come and do public comment from these different groups.
You know, honestly, one other thing I would really urge every neighborhood association to do, because I was actually looking around and I couldn't find any website or anything more for what was called the Area 4 Neighborhood Coalition.
Okay.
And now it would be called the Port Neighborhood Coalition. I'm sure if anyone was doing anything. But I did manage to actually have all the newsletters that they had actually published 20 years ago, and I couldn't find them anywhere online. So I put them online.
Good for you.
Right? And as I was doing that, I was looking at some of the Agassiz archives.
Yeah.
I really think every neighborhood association should be cataloging things about the people in their neighborhood and making that part of the historical record. And that should be an obligation, not a government obligation, but a moral obligation.
Well, they take minutes.
People,
and at least
that's not enough. I mean, the thing is that you know, what you really need, I want people who are newcomers to a neighborhood, we want to be able to find out some of the history of their neighborhood. Hmm. They want to understand what has been there, who some of these people are, and whatever.
But that isn't just the neighborhood association. That could be churches. That could be.
Absolutely should include churches as well.
The schools in that neighborhood. We have 1 minute left, so let's anything we should announce about upcoming meetings?
There's a series of ordinance committee meetings on a variety of things.
Next week.
I think there might, there was really a series of zoning proposals, kind of fast and furious about cannabis delivery. I think
cannabis.
So some of those are coming up. I would just urge people to go to the Civic Journal calendar or the city calendar and look into some of those things.
Very good.
You know, this is kind of one of the slow seasons, I think, as we're heading into winter.
Anyway, and now with pandemic and the winter and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. So that's good. So we'll go to your site and we will. There's a city council meeting on Monday night.
Yep. Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a little less controversial this time. You know. Yeah, so.
True. Okay, we're going to be leaving in about 5 seconds.
So we'll be back in a couple of weeks on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye-bye.